This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about workers' compensation issues and laws and an update on the law and what some of the current problems may be. My guests are Alice O'Sullivan and Lester Friedman, past chairs of and members of the Council of Past Chairs of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, referred to as CBLS, and Joshua Friedman, who I'll let you know a little bit more about in just a moment. The guests are specialists in workers' compensation laws certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. They're also members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, referred to as CAW, that's CAAA. And the law offices of Lester Friedman and Joshua Friedman are located in Beverly Hills. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which has 11 fields of specialty law. Additional funding is provided by the CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys Association. And as we progress in the program, I will give you a website for CAW and a telephone number in case you want to try to find an attorney who is a workers' compensation attorney. And also you want to keep in mind that you want a certified specialist in the area of workers' compensation law. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and also by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And gentlemen, Lester and Joshua, are you there?
We are here, Chuck.
This is wonderful.
We are here. Thank you.
This is terrific. You know what I'd like to do, if you would, Lester? You have been on the program a number of times. Alice has been on the program a number of times. This is Josh's first time.
Hi, Lester. Hi, Josh.
And what I would like to do is have you, Lester, if you would, take a couple of minutes or so, whatever you think is appropriate, kind of give us the nuts and bolts of what someone should do when he or she is injured at work and wants to try to make a success of, frankly, the injury by way of making sure that he or she gets proper medical care as well as proper compensation.
Sure, Chuck, my pleasure. If a person has an injury which they believe is related to their employment, the first thing that they should do is report that injury to their supervisor. It is a requirement that it be reported to the supervisor or person in charge, not necessarily a co-worker, but a person who has some level of supervisorial
control
over that person.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chuck. What the person is supposed to do, who the supervisor is supposed to do, is then assist the injured worker in filling out a workers' compensation claim form. It's a very simple form. It just asks for name, address, how the injury happened, when it happened, and for the injured worker's signature. That is then turned in to the employer, and the employer has 24 hours within which to return that claim form to the injured worker with the name of the insurance company and who to contact.
So the worker who's been injured then has the responsibility of making the initial contact to the insurance carrier, is that right?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some situations where a worker may not necessarily know that it's a work-related injury, and they find out later on. Still, it is required that that claim form be filled out, but in some instances, and what I'm talking about perhaps is a person who's been exposed to some dangerous substance and they didn't realize that it was going to affect them until much later on, and then they might want to see an attorney first, and then the attorney will assist them in filling out that initial workers' compensation claim.
So we could perhaps be in a situation where an injured worker wouldn't find out about this for weeks, possibly even months, are you saying?
There is certainly that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
There are instances where perhaps let's go to the cumulative trauma, which is a repetitive motion injury where a person's been working, let's say, in a warehouse for 5 years, and every day they come home and their back is aching them, and then all of a sudden they just can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. But nothing specifically happened on any one day. well, that's still a work injury. If their back has been compromised because of the repetitive trauma of their employment, then that's an injury, and the injured worker may not realize that. Of course, the attorney who that person would contact would know that right away.
Now, Lester and Chuck, I hope I can interrupt for a minute.
This is Joshua. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Joshua. I want to expand a little bit on what Lester said initially, which was reporting the injury, assuming it was a specific type of injury, slip and fall, lifting something very heavy and felt an excruciating pain in your back, shoulder, et cetera. Is that reporting it initially to a supervisor, manager, et cetera, the longer an injured worker waits before it is reported, the harder it can become for an insurance company to kind of kick into gear and start providing medical treatment.
I think that's true, Josh. It sort of raises a red flag with an employer if somebody hasn't reported it.
Correct. And most of the time, it's something, the scenario is, I hurt my back lifting something. I took an Advil. I thought it would go away. I wanted to rest it over the weekend, and then I come back on Monday, and the pain is just excruciating.
And that's particularly true if there's a weekend involved.
Correct. Mm. Even worse is a holiday weekend.
Exactly.
Well, what about in today's economic situation where there are a lot of people who are unemployed and people who may, if they do feel, if they do have some kind of injury, are concerned, gee, if I report this, I may lose my job. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it is a policy of the state of California, and there's a labor code section, it's called 132A, that prohibits an employer from discriminating against an employee because he or she has made known their intention to or have filed a workers' compensation claim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the protection there.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. By the way, can one, before one is injured, can one now still pre-designate the doctor who you would like to be treated by? Let's say you put down your internist or whomever. Is that still possible?
Yes. When a person is employed, they are supposed to be given the option of selecting a pre-designated doctor. That doctor has to be a doctor that the individual has regularly seen and who would agree to treat that person in the event of a work-related injury. So if they haven't been provided that option, then the individual should do so right now. It's never too late to put a pre-designation in until you have that injury.
Let me throw something out to you, and this happened to me some years ago with my medical coverage. I wanted my internist to be pre-designated in the event I was injured, and I learned from his office that he did not want to take any work injury cases, and I've been treated by this guy, by this doctor, for quite some time. What is an employee to do if you find out that your physician, your regular physician, does not want to get involved with the workers' compensation system?
Well, I think this is Joshua. I think the blunt answer is that if that physician is unwilling to treat an injured worker through the workers' compensation system, then that pre-designation, in essence, doesn't exist.
Uh-huh. So what does it, let's say the worker contacts the doctor and the doctor says, no, I'm sorry, I don't take any workers' compensation cases. What happens in the system when the worker is injured? How does the employer, how does the insurance company deal with someone like this?
Well, if an employer has subscribed to a medical provider network, the employer, upon notice that an injury has occurred and they're accepting of the injury, that is, the employer told the insurance company, yes, this injury is one that happened at work, the insurance company will provide the worker, either upon request or voluntarily, a list of physicians who they have contracted with who agree to see workers' compensation injury cases.
Now, is this a situation in that this is a list of medical doctors who the insurance carrier has set up for the employer? Is the injured worker, should the injured worker be concerned that maybe I won't get the kind of treatment I would like to get because this is someone designated by the insurance carrier in conjunction with my employer? And in other words, are you going to get substandard treatment, or is this just a, let's say, an inappropriate question on my part?
You know, there are some physicians on the insurance company's list who are very sympathetic to an injured worker. So I can't make a general rule, but you have to be able to sort out which physicians are more sympathetic to the injured worker.
Well, certainly the injured worker can't do that, Lester, because the injured worker is totally unaware of who these doctors are.
Absolutely, and that's the entree for an attorney to assist an injured worker in selecting an appropriate treating doctor from the list of hand-selected physicians that the insurance company has on their list.
And don't you think that's one of the main reasons for getting an attorney is to get proper medical care?
Yeah.
In my opinion, I think quality medical care is the number one priority for injured workers.
I agree with you, Josh.
And I think that, again, one of the pitfalls that an injured worker who does not have an attorney can run into, certainly initially, is if there is a medical provider network in place, and if the injured worker is sent to a medical clinic initially for treatment, how is an injured worker supposed to know that there is an option for them to treat within a medical provider network and how to access that information? And those, that demand for that information needs to be made upon the insurance company, and most injured workers who are not represented do not know that. And wouldn't know how to ask for that information.
So isn't it fair to say that if an injured worker has an injury that really requires more than just a small amount of medical care, if the injury does require some medical treatment, that it's really important to get the proper doctor, the all of the time, deadlines and all that, that's probably one of the most important reasons to get an attorney in this system.
This is Lester. Absolutely true. Look, the whole idea behind the system is to get a person better and get them back to work. That's a successful case for me. And if you don't get the proper medical care, that's never going
to
happen.
Let me throw this out to you. Why is it important for an injured worker? I mean, you've already mentioned that it's important to get an attorney to help you because obviously most people who are working are totally unfamiliar with the whole workers' compensation system. Why is it important to get a certified specialist? What's the deal there?
Well, this is Joshua. A certified specialist is an attorney who has, in essence, a seasoned veteran. There are certain requirements that have to be met before an attorney can even take the examination to become a certified specialist in workers' compensation. There's a whole list of requirements, certain number of trials, depositions of physicians, etc. And then in addition to that, once all those requirements have been met, then there is a one-day examination similar to a one-day bar exam for when you become an attorney.
Which is now 3 days, the regular bar exam.
The regular bar is 3 days.
Yes.
To become a certified specialist is 1 day.
Mm-hmm.
And so the attorneys that have that are certified specialists really have that the highest knowledge of the workers' compensation system, and would practice that type of law on a regular basis.
In addition, there's peer review, so you have to, you know, the people you work with have to, in effect, approve how you do your business. So if and in addition, there's an I think it's
you
25.
You as the attorney, you're
yes.
talking about, yeah.
And there's like 25% of your practice at least has to be in the field. So you can't just handle one case, pass a test, and be a certified specialist.
Let me also mention this because I mentioned it at the top of the program. I think if you or someone close to you has been injured at work, or you want to at least be aware of what's available to you, I'm going to give you right now the California Applicants Attorneys Association statewide phone number as well as its website where you can find out who these certified specialists are in workers' compensation. For CAW, and that's the abbreviation for the California Applicants Attorneys Association, CAW, the statewide number is... if you've got a pencil or a pen and have a piece of paper, 1-800-648-3132, 1-800-648-3132. The website for CAW is www.caaa.org, caaa.org. And that's how you can find out who the workers' compensation attorneys are. Certainly, it's my suggestion that you want to make sure that you get someone who is a certified specialist. And it's my understanding that most of the, a very high percentage of the CAW members are certified specialists in workers' compensation law.
Chuck, I also want to mention
please.
That CAW provides the best continuing education for attorneys who are in the field of workers' compensation, and they do a terrific job. Lester, I know you have a lot to do with that, but it really is very impressive.
Let me just take a pause here for a moment. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our program on an update of workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are certified specialists in the area of workers' compensation law. They're also members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and they are Lester Friedman, Joshua Friedman, and Alice O'Sullivan. And for those of you who are listening to us live, in a few minutes I'll give our local phone number. You can call in whether you're listening to us live in the Bay Area, whether you're listening to us live on the Internet at www.kalw.org. So be patient if you would, and I'll give the local phone number and you can call in. Let's go, if you don't mind, to this. Let's assume that you, as the worker who has been injured, you've filled out the claim form, you've submitted to the insurance company, and the insurance carrier denies your claim. Well, is that it? Are you up, might as well you just throw in the towel?
This is Josh, and Chuck, the answer is absolutely not. Just because a claim is initially denied does not mean that a claim will continue to be denied or will end up being a denied claim. Claims, as we've seen, can be denied really for many reasons. Medical authorizations weren't signed. They need to investigate more. I mean, there is an unlimited ways that claims can be denied, and really what happens after a claim is denied is that sometimes the injured worker thinks that is it, and that's the end of the road, when in effect there's many procedures, including obtaining an attorney, to turn that denied claim into an accepted claim.
And by the way, just so everyone understands this, and we've done so many programs because CAW has been a funder of this program for a long time, many, many years, there is no retainer that a workers' compensation attorney can ask an injured employee to pay. Is that correct?
That is correct. For state workers' compensation, I think it's a little bit different in federal, but most employees are covered by the state system.
Okay. So in other words, when someone goes through the whole system of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, an award for the attorney's fee must be made by the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. Is that correct?
That is correct. This is Lester. That's correct. Any fee that is paid to a injured worker's attorney must be ruled upon by the workers' compensation judge. An attorney is not permitted to take a fee unless a judge has awarded it.
What if the attorney wants to take the deposition of perhaps a medical doctor that was retained by the insurance company to show that this worker was not as injured as badly as the worker is claiming and the worker's doctor is claiming? What if the attorney, the workers' compensation attorney for the injured worker, wants to take the deposition? Is the injured worker responsible for paying money up front to his or her attorney to take the deposition, or how is that dealt with?
This is Josh. The answer is no. There is no fees that ever need to be advanced by an injured worker. There may be certain circumstances where an applicant attorney who is taking the deposition of a physician may need to advance the money for certain fees, like the court reporter and a fee to the doctor, but that will be reimbursed directly from the insurance company to the applicant attorney.
And when you say the applicant, that's the injured worker.
Correct, the injured worker.
Okay, let me throw this out. In that we're getting to, we still have a few minutes left in the statewide version of the program, which is the first half hour. What about the role of state disability? What if someone who is an employee is also, through the employer, contributing to the state disability fund and therefore at some point would be entitled to being able to file a claim or whatever it's properly called with state disability? Could you explain that, and how does that relate to the making a claim with an insurance carrier for a workers' compensation case? How do you deal with that, state disability?
Wait, this is Lester. The workers' compensation payments, if you're receiving temporary disability, which is the equivalent in the workers' compensation system of getting state disability, to the extent that you are getting benefits that are equal to or greater than state disability, you are precluded from getting state disability for that period of time. Now, there are many permutations to that theory. What if your state disability rate were higher than your workers' compensation rate? Well, in that situation, you may be able to get a supplemental payment from state disability. What happens if the temporary disability period, which is limited to 104 weeks, runs out? Well, if you have filed for state disability, then you may be entitled to get the state disability for an additional period of time up to 1 year.
And when should one file, let's say, whatever the basic information may be with state disability? I mean, obviously, someone who's getting workers' compensation disability through the employer's insurance, workers' compensation insurer. You can't get both workers' compensation insurance through your employer's carrier as well as state disability. But when should the injured employee apply or submit information to the state disability system?
Well, this is Joshua. Well, certainly if a claim is denied initially and a physician has taken the injured worker off of work because of an injury, then the application should be filed instantaneously so that the injured worker can start receiving those state disability benefits, because as the claim is denied, there will not be any workers' compensation temporary disability benefit.
And what about if you go ahead, even though you are getting temporary disability, I recommend that people go ahead and file the claim, letting state disability know that they are getting temporary disability, so they don't want the money now, but they're filing the claim to protect the amount of money that they will get, since it's based on certain quarters that you work.
This is Lester. That's absolutely correct. It's my practice to tell people to immediately file for state disability, notifying state disability if, in fact, they are receiving workers' compensation benefits, that they are getting those benefits. And the reason is exactly as you stated, you want to have the quarters that qualify you for state disability to be the quarters in which you were working and making the highest amount of money. And the way state disability works is they don't count the quarter within which you are filing your claim, they don't count the preceding quarter, and then they go back for four quarters backwards, and that's the period of time that they base your state disability rate upon.
Right. Good.
Okay. Well, that helps us in that respect. What if, and this is probably maybe the last question that I will ask you in the statewide version of the program, what if the injured worker who's referred by his employer to the carrier, and the carrier assigns the worker to a particular doctor in the medical provider network. What if the worker doesn't like that doctor? What right does the worker have, the injured employee have, to try to get some other doctor?
This is Joshua. Based on that scenario that you just mentioned, Chuck, the injured worker certainly has the right to change treating physicians within that medical provider network. The pitfall that can come from an injured worker who does not have an attorney is that they may not know that information, mm-hmm. and then they may not know how to access that medical provider network information, either a website or a hard copy of a list where they can look at some physicians that are within the network that can treat the mm-hmm. injured worker.
And they may not even know who to choose if they can find it.
Exactly.
All right. I think we have unfortunately come to the end of the first half hour, the statewide version of the program. But for those of you listening to the program live, we shall continue. It is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KOW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our program on workers' compensation issues and laws, and we try to do this about six times during the normal 12-month period. Pardon me. I'm getting all choked up about this, you know.
I guess.
Wow. I want to let you know who my guests are, but first of all, if you have a question, if you are an injured worker or you know someone who's an injured worker, or even if you're an employer, I welcome you to call. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134 if you'd like to talk with my guests on the air. If you're listening to us on the internet live by radio, www.kalw.org, that number is also accessible to you, 1-415-841-4134. My guests are Joshua Friedman, Lester Friedman, and Alice O'Sullivan. They are certified specialists in workers' compensation law. They are certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. They are also members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and they've got an incredible amount of experience, and they are ready, willing, and able to talk with you on the air if you would like to call. Let me just mention again that if you are trying to find an attorney in your area, wherever you may be in the state of California, I'll give you both the 800 number for CAW as well as its website. This is how you can find an attorney, and I think it's also important that you make sure that that attorney is a certified specialist in the area of workers' compensation. CAW's 800 number is 1-800-648-3132. Its website is www.caaa.org. And so if you go to either of those, the 800 number, or you go to the website, you will be able to find out who the attorneys are in your area who you might want to try to meet and tell them about the problem that you do have. So if you are interested in joining us with your question, your comment, your concern, again, whether you have been injured or you know someone who has been injured on the job and you're concerned about what the rights of a worker may be. Or if you're an employer and you have some comment that you would like to make, some question that you would like to pose, certainly please join us. My guests, for example, Alice O'Sullivan had an extensive career as an attorney working for an insurance carrier. My other two guests, Lester Friedman and Joshua Friedman, exclusively represent injured employees. So please join us with your questions, your comments, et cetera. And Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. This is uncanny. I'm a provider. I'm an acupuncturist. Mm-hmm. And I have been seeing patients. I work for a urgent care facility. And I've been seeing workers' compensation patients now since December. And we're getting back receipts saying that that injured worker can't see me.
Why?
Because I'm not in the MPN, quote-unquote, list.
You're not in the medical provider network, is that right?
That is true. I never knew I needed to be in a medical provider network.
Mm-hmm.
These patients have gotten great results from me. They want to see me. I'm getting emotionally injured by all this drama, and I'm not sure what I can do for them. Do I have to be on the medical provider network, and if so, how do I do that? And then ultimately, I mean, I believe that my employer is.
Oh, really?
But I'm not.
You believe your employer is on the medical provider network, but you are not as an, and you are an employee, not a a contractor with your employer?
That's true.
That's very interesting. Well, let me see if I can get some comments for you, Sharon. Lester or Joshua or...
I think I'll take this off the line so I can...
Okay, hang up and turn your radio back on and let me see if we can get some answers for you. Go ahead, Lester or Joshua, please.
I'll take this. This is Lester. In order to be on a medical provider network, each insurer has a plan that they subscribe to. There are larger organizations that provide these medical provider networks. One of the provider networks is a Blue Shield plan. Another one is a Blue Cross plan. If those plans are accepted by the insurer as being the medical provider network, then a person would automatically be acceptable within that MPN. Mm-hmm. Now, what disturbs me a bit is that the individual who called said that she wasn't, but her employer is.
Yeah.
And my feeling is, although I couldn't, you know, cite it, you know, in verse, is that once the entity is in the medical provider network, if the billing is through that entity, then that entity is a provider within the network.
Lester, what do you suggest that Sharon should do at this point? Obviously, the insurance carrier is saying that, hey, we're not going to pay for the acupuncture. I know I have acupuncture myself on a fairly regular basis, and my acupuncturist, who happens to be a medical doctor, does bill my carrier, and the carrier pays for it. So what recommendation do you have, if any, for Sharon at this point?
Well, as a non-professional in doing that type of work, I would suggest that if the employer is on the medical provider network, that the employer contact whoever it is that is denying Sharon's bills and speak to them and say, well, what's wrong? Are we billing this incorrectly? We are on your MPN.
Yeah, and Sharon, I would suggest also... you're pushing your employer. I presume your employer may also have an attorney from time to time. If the employer is kind of wishy-washy on this, I would suggest you find out who the employer's attorney is and you contact the attorney and see if you can't get some help from the employer's attorney in pushing this. So good luck to you, Sharon. All right, we have Ann. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
All right, how are you, Ann?
I'm great. Listen, my question is probably pretty simple. Once you've gone through the it's a workers' comp and all the medical and the surgery and the physical therapy and everything's been done. What do you have to, what is there any recommendations that you should do for the future in 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, the injury flares up again?
Ah, good point. Good point.
So everything is great, and I've been really lucky with my adjuster and everything, but I keep thinking I didn't go to a lawyer, I didn't do anything, but so what do you recommend I do in case it happens in the future?
Now, let me ask you this, Ann, if you would, for us. Is your case closed at this point, or do you know what the status is at this point?
No, it's not. It's not closed.
Okay.
So basically what they said was it's going to, they did it so it would be open for future treatment, and they said that if, for example, in the next 5 years I need medical treatment, they would look at it and it shouldn't be a problem. Maybe after 5 years it could be a little bit more of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my adjuster telling me that. I do
Karen,
have to
Karen, this is Lester. Did you sign documents and have something approved by a judge awarding you the future medical care?
I signed some documents. Yes, I did. It was, the QE something? I signed something. But it was, exactly, I did sign something, and it was effectively that for future.
Well, did a judge approve a settlement which gave you a degree of disability, and within that document there would have been an award of future medical care? Did that occur?
Let's see. Basically, what I signed, they had to go through the QME panel. Right.
Yeah, but the question, and pardon me, the question is, do you know if a judge approved this?
No, I'm afraid I...
You don't. Okay.
I'm looking at it right now, what I signed, and
Does it show a judge's signature, or...
Is it called a stipulation?
Okay, this is Josh.
Yes, it's a stipulation, and no, I don't see I don't see an actual judge, but that doesn't mean...
Okay, it's called stipulation with request for award, something
That's
like
exactly
that.
That's exactly what it is, yes.
Okay,
I do.
Okay.
And what a this is Josh, what a stipulations with request for award does is it's a formal document that establishes the level of your disability as a result of that industrial injury and will be used as an award of future medical care. And that award of future medical care stays with you in essence until you pass.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something about 5 years. That 5-year mark means that within 5 years from the date of the injury, if you believe that your disability has increased, if you've worsened within 5 years from that date of injury, you have the ability to reopen that award of disability to try and increase that percentage of disability. After 5 years from the date of the injury, you do not have that option. But that award of future medical care will remain with you, in essence, forever.
Mm.
I think one thing to keep in mind, Josh, I'm sure you'll agree with me here, is that the medical award is for medical care relating to the injury only.
Yes, thank you.
So,
and that is something that I do explain a lot also. It is not an extra insurance, health insurance policy. It is an award of future medical care for the injured body part.
Okay.
And what happens sometimes is if an injured worker doesn't get medical care for, say, 5-6 years and suddenly decides now is the time I need medical care, it really becomes a medical question of whether that care is related to the injury or whether there's been some sort of intervening event.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you still have the right to go to a doctor and have that paid for by the insurance company.
Correct. And that's a very good point, Alice, is, you know, even if in the next year or two you're not in need of active medical treatment, there certainly is not a reason why you wouldn't get a routine checkup with that physician through the workers' comp system for two reasons. Number one, you know, to check on that injured body part and see how you're doing. And number two, it lets the insurance company know that, you know, yes, I'm still around and I'm still seeking medical treatment.
That's excellent advice.
It kind of keeps everybody awake a little bit.
Yes, that's excellent advice.
Ann, thank you very much for calling. I hope this has helped you.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. I
okay.
appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Let me tell you about a couple of things that I'd like you to know about. If you're concerned, if you're a tenant or a landlord and you'd like to know what your rights and responsibilities are, and as a landlord, the San Mateo County Law Library will be having in actually a couple of weeks on March 20th at noon in Redwood City. It's going to have a presentation about your rights and responsibilities as a landlord. If you're a tenant, you might want to attend that also and find out yourself what the landlord's rights and responsibilities are, because responsibilities reflect what your rights are. So if you're interested in that, that's going to be on Thursday, March 20th. In Redwood City at the County Law Library, which is on Hamilton Street. Let me give you a phone number for that, 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. Also, if you are having problems as a renter, you're a homeowner trying to hang on to your home, or maybe you have a credit reporting or debt collection problem, three very significant organizations, nonprofits, the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County, the Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto, the Housing and Economic Rights Advocates are having on March 22nd. They're going to have from 10 a.m. to noon a presentation that is available to you, no charge whatsoever. If you're interested in that, it's, by the way, a free workshop. There will be nonprofit attorneys there who are experts on these issues, as well as HUD-certified housing and credit counselors. That number, in case you'd like to jot it down, 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443, extension 307. And before we take our next call, and let me invite you again to call in and ask a question, make a comment if you would like to, if you're an injured worker, or even if you're an employer who has an injured worker and you would like to make a comment or ask a question. The number again, 1-415-841-4134. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone for you who's experienced for a half an hour consultation. And generally throughout the state of California, for a half an hour consultation, it's a very good investment. It could be for half an hour as low as $25. It may be $35. All right, let's go with, we have right now GS. GS, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much. I always learn so much from this show. I appreciate you having it.
You're
asking,
welcome.
I'm asking for a friend, and I'll try to keep this short. Went on a hike out just to see the bay and stuff, out to the point near Albany, the whole homeless area there. And I had never seen it before, never heard of it before, and I was asking one of the people, what's this all about? Anyway, the fellow said, I was injured at the place I used to work. I think he worked in a steel factory or something. And I wasn't able to work after that, and I didn't have an income, so I wound up coming here. The problem, I think, is, I kind of think I already know the answer to the question. This was years and years ago. It was at least 8 or 10 years ago. And I told him, I don't know how long it's been, but I can almost guarantee you, you need to see an attorney who's a specialist in this kind of law. And he said, well, even if I saw an attorney, I don't think I could afford to retain one.
Oh, I see.
Said, well, I'd help you with the initial fee, but after that, I don't know what to tell you. But first, it's been a long time. Secondly, I don't know really what he can do. I doubt that the treatment he might be able to get, even if he could get medical care, could make him well again.
So, G.S., you're saying this goes back how many years now that this person was injured?
Yeah.
How many years?
I met these people, I think it was a couple of years ago, and he told me even then, as I was asking about the place, that he had been injured like 8 or 10 years ago.
Let me see if we can get a response for you to see whether or not there's a statute of limitations that has run, et cetera, et cetera. So turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for your question. Lester or Josh, what comments do you have on this?
This is Lester. First of all, as far as the fee is concerned, there is no fee up front for a consultation with a workers' compensation attorney. If the attorney does take the case is on a contingency. The contingency usually is no higher, well, I say almost always, no higher than 15%, and it must be approved by a workers' compensation judge. Mm-hmm. So that should not be an impediment. As far as the period of time and the statute of limitations, if that injury was reported and if there were no notifications given to the injured worker that he or she must file the claim within a certain period of time, it's called a Reynolds notice, if those were not done, then the statute of limitations has not run because mm-hmm. the statute of limitations only runs when an individual is given notice that he or she must file within a certain period of time.
So and I will tell you from experience that at least I know of a couple of carriers who do not give that notice as a matter of practice because it's too expensive to do so.
Really? How interesting. So there's your answer, GS. If you should get in contact with this person again, you have a little bit more knowledge about it. I'm going to come back to Anne for just a moment, and she's not certainly on the phone any longer. But Anne, my thought about the situation and your concern about what your rights may be, in addition to what my guests have discussed on this program, I don't see why you would not want to make a contact with a workers' compensation attorney and have an initial consultation just to go over with the attorney what your future rights may be. Because as you have learned from this program, and correct me, guests, if you would, I think Anne still has a right, and without having to pay a fee, to confer with a workers' compensation attorney what her future rights may be.
Sure, and she can also call a lawyer night.
And you can also call a lawyer night, Anne, which we will do at the end of this month, March 26th, because at that point, Luis Rodriguez, the state bar president, will be here. He said he'd come here to the station, and Alice will be here for Call a Lawyer in the conference room, and we'll have a real fun time. It's 800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917 for our Call a Lawyer night. And let me see, who do we have now? We have Sonia. Sonia, welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you. Thanks for this topic.
Sure.
I'm an injured worker, and my injury was almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to go back to work. A year after, I've been released to go back, and I'm not really capable of doing the job that I was injured on.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm physically not able, but there's another position job that I can do that is paid $7 an hour, which is a big cut, $7 an hour.
What were you being, Sonia? What were you being paid before? How much?
$29
an hour. Okay. So what is your question?
My question is, if I'm going to take the kind of cut, see, it wasn't full-time. That's why it's not, it sounds like a lot, but it's not full-time. So as a result, and there'll be less work because I had two different positions in it, and it's still, I didn't work full time necessarily. Mm-hmm. So because I will only be able to work one of the jobs, and with the $7 an hour cut, what I'm wondering is, I'm on disability now. Will I be able to be compensated through disability for partial because the disability, because I'm not able to do the job that I did before?
Sonia, let me ask you, because I'm confused. I thought you said that the job that you will return to, it's not $7 an hour. You're saying it's a cut of $7 an hour. Is that right?
Yes.
You'll be paid, you understand, you'll be paid $22 an hour.
A little over 21.
About 21. Okay. Let me get some comments from my guests on your question. It's a very good one. What comments do you have, Lester or Joshua? Please.
Chuck, this is Josh. My initial question is going to be whether or not, ma'am, you are have been what we call declared permanent and stationary by your physician, or is he or she just releasing you on a trial basis back to work?
Well, I'm supposed to be evaluated before I go back.
Mm. So you don't know yet what it is. Okay.
Yeah, I have to be evaluated. They're going to test my abilities, my strengths, mm-hmm. et cetera, before I go back. He's not going to make the final say. He's saying at this time, at point, I should be available to go, ready to go back in May, a year from the accident.
Okay, this is Lester. The general answer to the question is that if you are temporarily, partially disabled, then state disability would still pay you, or workers' comp possibly, if you still have benefits available, for your temporary partial disability. But if you are permanently partially disabled, then the benefit that you're entitled to is the permanent partial disability benefit based upon the level of your disability, which would be part of your, ultimately part of your settlement.
So in other words, Lester, if I can throw in what Sonia is talking about, she's saying when she goes back to work, assuming she does, her hourly rate will be just under $22 an hour compared to what she was getting before, $29. So I think with what you are saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that if her case is settled, she's not going to get, for the future, the additional $7 that she's going to lose going back to work. Am I right on that or not?
Well, yes and no. Again, if the period of time is temporary partial disability, that loss of $7 an hour would be compensated by payments of two-thirds of that value, which is her loss of earnings while she's temporarily partially disabled.
Mm-hmm.
If she has a permanent partial disability, then whatever her level of disability is going to be compensated at her permanent disability rate. And that permanent disability rate is what a lot of people call their settlement money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So the real key, Lester, is this fair to say that the real key is whether her doctor has said that she's permanent and stationary or not? And in this case, he apparently is not.
That's
or she
correct.
Has.
And Sonia, do you have an attorney?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a lawsuit.
Okay. And have you talked to your attorney about this?
I've only met with my attorney once.
Really? Okay. And how long has your attorney been representing you?
Since October.
Okay. Well, you need...
Chuck, that's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah.
Our office here, and we are in Southern California, so I'm not trying to drum up business at all, but our office, when a person calls, they speak to an attorney, and it really troubles me when I hear that a person has retained an attorney and they've only met the attorney or talked to the attorney on one occasion when they have questions such as Sonia's.
This is a very important question. The office should respond to you and give you a proper answer, Sonia.
Well, I'm not saying they wouldn't. I haven't contacted.
Well, you got to do it. Hey, I want you to be an aggressive. Sonia, Sonia, I want you to be aggressive. You call tomorrow and ask the question. Okay.
I will.
Yeah.
I've asked them a couple questions, and I haven't talked to the lawyer, but I've gotten some response. So it's just that I haven't met in person but once, and I haven't asked as many questions because it's now getting closer to time.
Well, I think you...
And I called to see, yeah.
I want you to be more aggressive, and this is my approach. I'm a consumer advocate. I want you to be more aggressive. You got nothing to lose but a lot to gain. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. We have a couple minutes left. David, you're the star now. Go ahead. What do you have?
I'm coming from the other side a lot. I'm a small employer. I was a little naive. A worker of mine got hurt under circumstances that were maybe playful and not so responsible, even though I explained that to be careful on the ladder, but he was climbing a ladder at my business. I advocated for him vigorously to get all his, because the insurance company was jerking him around, and I advocated to get his coverage and all these things. And then somehow he got a little scared because he wasn't getting the surgery he needed for a shoulder that he got injured when he fell and hit this side of a cabinet. And anyway, long story short, so he's suing under the worker, the willful misconduct clause now. And of course, when I go to my insurance company, they say, oh, we don't cover these, you're on your own. So I'm kind of into the process a little bit, trying to go to the hearings where the insurance company is trying to settle their portion of the case and get out of their thing. And I'm just wondering if there's any advice for, should I try to settle this right away? I've tried a little bit with them, but they're really asking for quite a bit of money. And I'm just wondering how far should I push it and where do these cases go once they go to
court? So, David, at this point, you don't have a lawyer.
I haven't retained a lawyer because I wanted to see how the process unfolds.
Yeah, we are getting to the end of the time here. Let me get my guests to give you a very fast response. We will, by the way, David, we will be doing in a couple of weeks a program on issues involving small business, so you may want to join us for that 2 weeks from now, so you may want to join us then. So hang up, if you will. Let me see if I can get very, very quickly a response either from Lester or Josh.
You know what? I'm going to defer to Alice, I think, on that.
Alice,
one.
Please.
Okay, David, it's really important that you get an attorney. These serious and willful cases are not covered by insurance, so you do not have coverage through your workers' compensation carrier. You need to get an attorney because they are just as it says, they are serious. And we're almost out of time, I would just urge you to get an attorney.
Yeah, and there is a very high standard of proof that's necessary to show that it is serious and willful. And, David, you should get an attorney.
We have run out of time. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. Alice O'Sullivan.
Thank you, Chuck.
Lester Friedman, Joshua Friedman, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Certified specialists in workers' compensation law by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and also members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Thank you very much for joining us. Great to have you on the program. All right. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr, production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you're looking for a job, or you're an employer who is going to be interviewing people for employment, we're going to be talking about next week the questions that can and can't be asked in a pre-employment interview. My guests will be employment law attorneys Thomas Lenz and Scott Stillman. So I hope you join us then. And 2 weeks from now, we will have a program on issues involving small business. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. This is 90.